From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, there's a podcast called Mueller, She Wrote, and the creators experienced a little serendipity yesterday. Then Michelle Williams plays Gwen Verdon in Fosse Verdon. The series looks at the dancer's troubled relationship with choreographer Bob Fosse.
He would say that everything looked good on her, that he couldn't tell if steps were good or bad because she made all of his moves sing. And she would say about him, I know how to speak his language. I can hear what he's thinking. So that kinship, it didn't create the happiest marriage, but it did create the happiest creative interaction of either of their lives.
All that coming up on The Frame. Mueller, She Wrote has been a weekly podcast since 2017, examining the developments in the investigation by Robert Mueller into Russian interference in the 2016 election. Episodes are occasionally taped before a live audience, and one was scheduled for last night at Largo here in Los Angeles. And then serendipity struck when it was announced that the Mueller report would be released that same day. The podcast hosts are stand-up comedians Jaleesa Johnson, Jordan Coburn, and a woman who only goes by her initials.
And now, please welcome the host of Mueller, She Wrote, A.G.
A.G. won't reveal her full name because she's a federal employee who's prohibited by law from participating in partisan political activities. I was in the audience for last night's taping and then spoke with Jordan Coburn and AG afterward. And I began by asking AG how the timing of the Mueller report changed her show last night.
It literally changed like 20 minutes before we got here because we've had the same structure for live shows that we've been doing for all two of our previous live shows so far. I was like, we can't just act like it's a normal day.
All right, you guys, we have a really great show planned for you that we just scrapped and we were probably going to go right off the cuff. This is called Going in Cold. But we hope you enjoy it. We're going to do some Sabotage. We're going to do some Fantasy Indictment League because there's...
Yeah, we normally keep it a little bit more lighthearted and fun and have some games involved, you know, in the live show. We do like a quiz section on our news stories, but yeah, we had to switch it up last minute.
You go by the initials AG, and for people who don't understand, does that have something to do with the Hatch Act? And why are your initials and the Hatch Act in some way connected for people who don't understand what the Hatch Act is?
I'm going out of my way extra to not violate the Hatch Act because I work for Trump's executive branch. And so the Hatch Act basically says that you can't use your agency or title as a federal government employee to advocate for or against somebody running for political office. And we know Trump's been running since the day he got into office because that's his moneymaker. I take it a step further. I could use my name. I just want to keep it all out of it, and I want to keep a nice giant crowbar separation between what I do at night and on the weekends and what I do during the day.
What do you think your work and your background give you in terms of understanding issues that other people might not have, working in the government? And I think you're a veteran, is that right?
Right.
What does that perspective give you?
Understanding how absolutely slow the government rolls. It's just so slow. And people right now, they want answers now, and they just don't understand why things take so long. And I hope that I can lend some explanation as to why they do and that it's actually that way for a purpose.
When the report came out, did you say to yourself, that's it for the podcast? Because, I mean, obviously the title of the podcast is Mueller, She Wrote, and Mueller has written.
I'm not sure, really, because I don't feel that I dictate where this show goes. I think the listeners dictate whether or not the show keeps happening. But, you know, personally, we've got 20 offspring investigations from this that are still open and ongoing. We've got the Stone trial that doesn't start till November. We've got Bijan Keon in July. We'll keep covering it if people keep needing us to cover it.
Yeah, I think we know that there's a lot to be covered and it could go on for a very long time. But my fear, I guess, was that people would take Barr's four-page summary and think that that means shop's closing up and that's all there's to be seen. But I don't think that's how our fans are, and I think we have a lot more to do.
Everyone was like, oh, they're done, no further indictments. And then, boom, Greg Craig gets indicted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. Sorry. First Names
that's
just
right.
came in.
One indictment for each name. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're like, that's the real
crime.
Two
first names.
What do you think it is that you give listeners that maybe they can't find some other place?
I think we remove the talking angry heads that a lot of people get tired of. But mostly the whole kind of mission of this was to keep people interested and keep people engaged and to keep it simple and to take these traumatic and important events and spin them into humor. It kind of helps us get through it. It's kind of like if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Mm-hmm. And fans say that we're curatorial journalists, and everything that we do, we always provide context as well. So it's a huge story, obviously, and everything fits in a timeline. And I think we do a good job of reminding everyone the importance of each news bit that comes up and keep it rolling in a way that's easy to digest.
And yet, in a very recent episode of your podcast, you said, "We are neither journalists nor lawyers." What would you say you are?
Comedians reading the news, and we're making it factual, and then we might wildly speculate, but we make sure to designate those two things from one another.
I wanted a diverse panel, so I got all women. And
yeah, and the fact that we're not experts necessarily, I think, makes us a lot more approachable to a lot of people that might get scared sort of by watching C-SPAN or something.
When you decided at the very beginning that it was going to be led by women, why was that important to you, and what do you think that means in terms of the way that you see stories and the way that you share information?
I think that women have a different concept of justice just because of how we walk through the world. It's not strict black and white kind of Mueller-esque law, histrionic this or that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people just really want to hear women's voices right now. They tell us that all the time, and we're happy to do that.
You said in a recent episode, your day job may be leaving me. Is that something you're worried about or something you're going to choose to do?
That's something that's happening, and I can't talk too much about it because it could be litigated. But yeah, my job is, we'll just say it's going away, and that's not because I want it to.
Do you think that has been a good trade, or are you angry about that?
Both. I've been in service, including my Navy service, 13 years. It's something that Obama motivated me to do, and it means a lot to me. But I got to do what I got to do. And I can't do what they won't let me. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Jordan and AG, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Coming up, Michelle Williams takes on the role of dancer Gwen Verdon in a TV series about her relationship with choreographer Bob Fosse. 3-time Oscar nominee Michelle Williams is known for bringing a realism and a soulfulness to her roles. After wrapping up the popular teen drama Dawson's Creek, Williams carefully chose the character she would play next, sticking mainly to independent films. Williams has now returned to television, taking on the role of Broadway legend Gwen Verdon in the limited FX series Fosse Verdon. Bob Fosse's tip fedora and slinky jazzy steps were made famous by stage productions and film adaptations such as Sweet Charity, Cabaret, and the original production of Chicago. Fosse's legacy has overshadowed Verdon's, even though she was his uncredited artistic partner and collaborator. When Williams came on the frame, she started by sharing how she figures out if she's interested in taking on a new role.
So the thing that I'm always looking for is a spark of knowing and unknowing. But the other thing that I'm looking for is something mysterious, something that I'm drawn to, but I don't understand why. And that's it's not an intellectual process. And luckily, I can't get in my own way about it. I can't overthink it. It's just an instantaneous reaction that happens or it doesn't happen. And when it does happen, the work starts immediately. Your mind sets upon the problem and wants to figure it out.
And at what point did you say to yourself, everybody knows about Bob, but people don't really know that much about Gwen? And did you become curious yourself as much as a person, as an actor, when this project came around?
Yes, very quickly. Very quickly. I wanted to know who she was. And then once I had signed on to the part and once I had gotten the part, the kind of deeper, more personal research that I was able to do, and to realize that in order to play this woman, I was going to have to become a bigger person.
What do you mean by that? That's an interesting idea.
She encompassed more than how I think of myself. She was more demonstrative, more comfortable in space, more outgoing, a bigger, better storyteller. Her aura, if I can say that, to me, felt bigger than mine. I was like, I was going to have to grow. And also, we play them from 30 into 64, and I've never been 64. So that was going to take a wild leap of imagination and understanding and growth. And the thing that I actually did as I was on this journey trying to figure out how am I going to make my spirit bigger to play this woman who I believe had a bigger spirit than I do. And I started meditating because I didn't know another way that I was going to fulfill the demands of this job. Also, the kind of rigors of this sort of job. I haven't done television in a long time. In a way, this is very akin to doing Broadway because of the schedule of it. So to have the kind of like stamina to endure that schedule, I needed to fill myself out. And the way that I found to do that was through meditation. It was the only way that I could create more space in my psyche.
I can think of so many different ways that somebody would look at Gwen and say, why did she do this? Why did this happen? How do you explain this? Were there things that you settled on very quickly in terms of that mystery that were appealing to you in terms of trying to figure out why she did certain things? And do you remember what those things might have been?
Well, maybe what you're referring to is why did she stay for so long?
I think that's one of the questions.
But I think that we can all relate to the things that we've done for the sake of love or what we believe is love. But ultimately, what Gwen was able to do is break free of that cycle. She never stopped being his friend and his collaborator, but she extricated herself from being personally hurt by his betrayals.
I want to play a clip from the third episode, and I'm not going to give very much away, but it's a scene that happens repeatedly throughout the series where Gwen and Bob have a disagreement over what Bob is and is not doing, especially in this scene as it relates to their daughter, Nicole.
Where's Patty? Who's supposed to see her?
What in the hell were you thinking?
What are you talking about?
You left her here alone with a grown man.
Nicole? I left it with Patty.
It's completely inappropriate.
What are you talking about? I left for 30 minutes.
You can't spend a single evening alone with your daughter. That was just too much to ask.
Hey, whoa,
where did you go?
Whoa,
what was your meeting for? What sort of a meeting exactly does somebody have for a half an hour at night? You couldn't stay here for a half an hour alone. They were on the bed together.
I'm doing you a favor.
A favor? Yeah,
that's
a favor?
Right.
Oh, that's what you think this is?
We're talking with Michelle Williams about the series Fosse Verdon. There's so much in that scene about their relationship and about what's going on in their lives. But I'm going to step back and ask you a little bit about access to material. They reference Nicole, who is their daughter, who is still around and was a part of the show. I want to ask you about what you were able to take away from Nicole, their daughter, that helped you in this performance.
So Nicole gave us an all-access pass to her memories and her experiences and her now understandings as a mature woman. So she was always available for us to ask questions of, big and small. And I mean, that scene specifically, not only are they arguing about childcare on the surface, what they're really arguing, what Gwen is actually arguing about, is an experience that she had as a 15-year-old girl when somebody left her alone on a bed with a man. So I would say that that argument is both a past and a present that are working in conflict with each other in that moment. And those things, you know, we talk about very difficult things in both of these characters' lives, both Bob and both Gwen. And Nicole has triumphed over a very unusual childhood and was able to delve into those places in her parents' psychologies with us without any fear or reservation. So she was obviously my greatest source.
Was there other archival information about their marriage? We know so much about Bob's work, and maybe he is a unreliable narrator of his own life, certainly in All That Jazz. And I'm wondering if you had access to other material that started to complete a picture of maybe what we didn't know, what we thought we knew that was mistaken. Were there certain paths beyond what Nicole was able to give you that you found helpful?
Well, I found YouTube very helpful. That gives me a kind of a template, you know, to see, oh, this is how this person, like, this is their cadence, and this is what they like to do with their hands, and this is how they touch their hair and cross their legs. You know, all of that kind of architecture is just crucial for me. And then the other thing were meeting people who had worked with Gwen throughout her life, from when she was younger to when she was older. And the thing that people kept saying to me was, she was just the most generous woman. Mm. God, she was so kind. Everybody who had known her had a story of how Gwen had helped them, mothered them, shepherded them. They were all so touched by knowing her.
There is a scene in the series where that generosity is on very prominent display. And it's at a point in the story where their marriage is on the rocks. There are a lot of points in the story where their marriage is on the rocks. And Bob Fosse is struggling with the editorial on Cabaret. And Gwen comes in to help him.
Something's off.
The cut is late.
Is that it?
Yeah, and while I used to care, and it should be, and while I used to care, and then you're back to Liza.
That's
do you have
it.
That?
No, I haven't.
While I used to care.
I haven't. And didn't we have, I remember that you had the camera upstage on the floor.
Liza's cross.
Yes.
Yeah. Where is that?
I don't have that circled.
I told her to print that. I know for a fact I told her to print that.
Order up the B-name.
And it really, I think, speaks to their creative partnership. There is the romantic partnership, there's the marriage partnership, and there is their creative partnership. How would you describe how they were able, and I think Gwen really took the lead on this front, to overcome what was dividing them as a couple and unite them as creative partners?
I think that they had a creative connection that goes beyond language that's actually, I think, rooted in both of their early experiences. They both had early childhood trauma, and it affected them. It caused them to behave in different ways. I thought of them as twins, like as yin and yang, and he was the dark and she was the light, and she wanted to rise above things and not look at where she had come from, and he wanted to dive deeper and deeper and more darkly into it. So I feel like they came from the same place psychologically, and so it created this understanding beyond words between the two of them, and that was best brought out in their creative partnership. He would say about her that everything looked good on her, that he couldn't tell if steps were good or bad because she made all of his moves sing. And she would say about him, I know how to speak his language. I can hear what he's thinking. So that kinship, it didn't create the happiest marriage, but it did create the happiest creative interaction of either of their lives.
Coming up on The Frame, more with Michelle Williams. She plays dancer Gwen Verdon in the FX series Fosse Verdon. We're talking with Michelle Williams, the star of the limited FX series Fosse Verdon. Williams plays Gwen Verdon. She was known as a brilliant performer, but was also the quiet creative partner of her husband and longtime friend, Bob Fosse. He's played by Sam Rockwell in the series. Fosse's work won critical acclaim, but much of it was made possible by his collaboration with Verdon. Here we pick up our conversation with Michelle Williams as she explains why Verdon didn't receive the recognition that she deserved.
I think it also says something about how women don't recognize themselves.
Hmm.
And how we're just coming to. We're just on the precipice of it. And I wish that Gwen was around now to see what was happening. I wish that she was around now to maybe experience herself in a different way. So I think it says as much about men in power as it does about how women felt personally disempowered.
Steve Levinson, who is a writer on the series and an executive producer, said in an interview about making this show post Harvey Weinstein and Me Too, and I'm quoting him now, "We have to tell this story because of the way he behaved instead of in spite of the way he behaved." He's talking about Bob Fosse. What does that mean to you when Steve Levinson says that?
I don't know. You know, I'm so inside Gwen. I operate from her position, which is why I would say, you know, it's about a woman who wasn't alive in a time where she would have thought to have been recognized. So it's hard for me sometimes. I mean, it's so personal to me. We worked for a long time on this show. I played this character for longer than I've played any character, and I aged with her. I feel her kicking around in me at 30, at 40, at 50, at 60. And so to comment from the outside about that, it's just, I'm not really ready yet. We also only wrapped it a month ago. She's still with me.
What did Gwen mean to you? What did you take away from the experience about what she went through and what she accomplished and how that might be relevant, not just to the world today, but to you in the world today?
I'd never aged with somebody before. I've never played somebody over the span of this much time. And one of the things that I took away is how much I loved playing her when she was older, because inside of me, I had all the memories of being her when she was younger. And I thought that was a really unexpected and gratifying side of playing somebody at 64.
I want to ask you about other things that you've talked about that, to me, tie back to Gwen, and that is about the way that women are treated in show business and about pay equity. I want to play a clip of you speaking before Congress on the whole issue of gender pay. There was a incident involving the reshoots for All the Money in the World when Kevin Spacey was forced out of the movie. We learned that Mark Wahlberg was paid $1.5 million for the reshoots, which was about $1.5 million more than you made. And you went and spoke on Capitol Hill in April of this year, and here's what you had to say.
It simply reinforced my life-learned belief that equality was not an inalienable right and that women would always be working just as hard for less money while shouldering more responsibility in their homes. And if it was like this for me, a white woman in a glamorized industry, how were my sisters suffering across their professions? When the news passed as quickly as it had broken, I sat paralyzed in feelings of futility. I've been a working actress since the age of 12, and I've taken every challenge as an opportunity. I've been accredited within my industry at the highest levels, and that still did not translate into equal and fair compensation.
That still did not translate. I mean, I can't imagine what that feels like. How does that change? How do we get from where we are and what you're talking about to it actually translating and meaning that people are paid equally based on equal work?
The infrastructure has to change. You know, I thought, I have a 13-and-a-half-year-old daughter, and I thought that I was going to have to teach her how to go underneath the structure and work covertly inside of it to get what she needed and wanted. And instead, I find in this last year or two that what we're talking about and attempting is a dismantling of some of that structure. So that's, I think, it has to somehow reach the top, ultimately. And that's what we're trying to do.
When you think about what you want to hold on to from Gwen and what maybe audiences who see this series might hold on to from Gwen and her life and her work, what are those things? And do you think what you might want to hold on to might be what you hope the audience could hold on to as well?
I was very lucky to spend this much time, 7 months, with a character who is essentially such a warm and generous and outgoing and giving human being. So to have existed in that space, and then she also had her quirks and foibles. You know, she was dramatic and prone to exaggeration and flighty and could be very single-minded when she wanted something for her career to the point where it affected her family and her daughter and her friends. And so she had her faults, but at the center of it was this like human warmth that so many people who came up to me who had known her were warmed by. And I suppose the thing that I walk away with is like, well, I'd like to be remembered like that. If that's how people passed her down to me, that's how I would like to be passed down when my life has reached its end.
Michelle Williams, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The limited series Fosse Verdon airs Tuesday nights on the FX cable channel. And that is it for this week. I'm John Horn. Have a great weekend. We're back here on Monday.